Hello, everyone, and welcome to Wisdom Calls One, the conference calls that educate you, support you, and empower you on this magical journey we call life. Today is the first day of what some call the magical and mystical month of May. Today is May Day, which many celebrate, and it's also known as Saint Germain Day. And Saint Germain sends his energy to each of us to use as we guide ourselves towards self-empowerment, which can ultimately lead to the path of self-realization. So on a day with many mythical and mystical celebrations going on, we have with us the perfect speaker, the internationally known astrologer and mythologist, Kelly Hunter. And I know many of you out there are as excited as I am about this call because I've gotten so many emails telling me how much they're looking forward to the call. Kelly comes to us this evening from the Virgin Islands, and she will be leading us on a journey of eclipses, squares, and definitely the mythical energy of Lilith. As I said in my email, Kelly has been studying astrology since 1967. She holds a master's degree in depth psychology and creative communication. Plus, she's received her doctorate in interdisciplinary studies in philosophy, cosmology, and myth. So we will be experiencing this month's astrology through the archetypal lens of which I just love. I do hope everybody has had a chance to visit Kelly's website, which is www.heliastar.com, which is HELIASTAR.com. And there is so much information on this site. Her link to astromythology gives us such a great insight into each sign, which, of course, gives us a glimpse into ourselves and why we do what we do. I love this link. And, of course, there's the Goddess Gallery, which is so fabulous. And I could go on and on about Kelly's website and the knowledge that it contains. But instead, let's get Kelly speaking, because I know there is a lot to talk about concerning this magical month of May. So, ladies, it is with great honor that I introduce to you M. Kelly Hunter.
I'm here.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Kelly. And I am going to turn the time right over to you. What does May have in store for us?
Well, here we are, first day of May, and this is one of the key months of the year. This is a very powerful year altogether. You know, it's the first year post-2012, which is, it doesn't seem like much happened really, but I'm wondering how many others of you really felt it. It was really a very cosmic change that sort of is coming down through the energy fields more and more dramatically, I think. So May. May is just full of powerful planetary patterns, and I think we're going to see a lot more indications that an era is ending and we are in a new era. This month contains two eclipses. We just had one a few days ago. The last full moon was an eclipse. That was, on April 4th, 5th? That was a subtle eclipse, a partial eclipse. We're going to have a really powerful one next week on May 9th. That is a total eclipse of the sun. Well, I shouldn't say total. A total eclipse would mean that the moon completely blocks out the sun. But in this case, the moon is a little farther away from us, so it's going to look a little smaller, and it's not totally going to cover the face of the sun. So it's going to have a ring of fire around it, a shining ring around the dark face of the moon, which is kind of dramatic. And the thing is, of course, an eclipse, it's kind of like a reset button. It hides the light. It's sort of like it's not just a regular new moon. Something shifts here. There's like an energetic shift. An eclipse is marked by the nodes of the moon, the points that show where the path of the moon crosses the path of the sun on either side of the sky. And these eclipse points, the nodes of the moon, are also called the dragon head and the dragon tail, which appeals to my mythic imagination because a dragon, you know, has a great deal of power. And this is the effect of an eclipse. We are seeing the sun and moon in an alignment so that we can see the moon in front of the sun. So that's what the nodes indicate. And this is a very powerful one, right at 19 degrees of Taurus. So Taurus is deep earth, rich, fertile earth. You know, Taurus is grounded, practical, earthy, productive. And there's a subcurrent of what are our values that are like the seeds we want to plant in the ground that are going to be productive and fertile in the long run. An eclipse is always quite transformative, but it's stronger where it can be seen, which in this case will be Australia, New Zealand, parts of South America, but not North America at all. Now, this eclipse, it's a new moon. So the sun and the moon are together. And as I said, they're aligned with the nodes of the moon. And in this case, it's the south node of the moon, which represents something we bring from the past. So there are some very deep energies coming forth through this eclipse. And this is something that we experience on a collective level. So we're tapping back kind of into our deep history, perhaps, unfolding values from the past. This is about productivity, too. It's about what the earth grows. And earth as a kind of living energy, living being. This moon really suggests a great appreciation of nature and her fecundity and her fertility. I mean, this is a long-term value we can count upon. This is listening to the earth energy. Eclipses are like gateways or crossroads or kind of like intersections where you get to it and are you going to go straight ahead or are you going to turn in one direction or the other? And I think eclipses are more like the turning points because it's almost like we can't go straight ahead. We've got to make some kind of a shift, and that's what the eclipse means. And it's not just that one day. An eclipse, especially such a powerful eclipse, kind of ripples through the system for at least 6 months until the next new moon eclipse, but more likely over the course of a year or even more. And anyone who is a Taurus, anyone whose birthday is May 9th, or right around there, you know, you're really feeling this eclipse. It's a big life changer for you and for all of us. And the moon and the sun are together, and right next to them, Mercury is also in Taurus, and Mars is also in Taurus. There's so much Taurus. And Taurus is about our literal experience. You know, Taurus is sensual, loves the sensuality in life. Taurus is like, give me the good things in life. And so part of this eclipse is like, what are the good things in life? You know, what do we spend our money on? Taurus is very much about values and about tangible, the tangible assets, like our money. And considering the economic climate, we really are needing to reconsider our values and what's worth it to spend money on. You know, we can't just waste money. You know, consumerism, such an American hobby, you know, is coming into question. So this eclipse opens up a new window. It's sort of like the lights go out, the lights come back on again, and something has changed. So there's a portal here also of, you know, bringing in from the past. So this eclipse asks, if we are satisfied with what we have harvested and what we have planted in the past. So this could be an investment paying off. This could be a failed harvest. This could be, you know, something that is holding us back, some place where we've gotten stuck. Sometimes Taurus gets kind of stuck in a rut. Kind of like a potted plant, if it's like doesn't have room to grow, it gets all root bound and it isn't very healthy anymore. You know, it's kind of, we need to till the soil and, you know, kind of make sure we have enough room to grow. So any planets that you have in this area are going to be under the dark light of the eclipse to come into a fuller kind of profile. So that is a very strong eclipse. And it's opposite Saturn as well. I'd like to bring Saturn in here for a moment. Saturn's in the opposite sign of Scorpio, right near the north node. Now, Saturn in Scorpio is the big lesson that we're all dealing with right now. You know, Saturn's like, okay, everybody, let's get it together here. You work with me, and I will reward you. I've heard Saturn described as a kind of a strict math teacher. It's like, okay, everybody, you know, do your homework, get it together, learn the lesson, and it's, you know, then pass the test. And Saturn can feel like that sometimes, but it's really giving us an opportunity to live up to what we are capable of. And Saturn says, this is the way to get there. So it's about examining. It's about going beneath the surface of things. Yeah, Taurus is the result. Taurus is the fruits of our labor. And the Saturn in Scorpio is saying, dig deeper. It's going down. It's like a well that has dried up, and we've got to tap the deeper vein of water that's running under the ground to kind of tap that so there's a kind of revitalization. So it can suggest there's some place that's run dry in our life. You know, we need to kind of water the plants to keep them growing. So it's also in Scorpio, it's kind of an alchemy. It's kind of a deep going into the subatomic current and kind of like, what's going on here? Certain patterns are dissolving, and how do we reconfigure the patterns? Well, we do that by the power of desire. What is it that we really want? What is the call of our inner soul essence that is going to bring the energy together through that power of desire, which is a very strong power? We don't need to get attached to it all, but we need to kind of channel the energy to bring about the revitalization, you know, that we all need. So wherever that's going on in your life, you know, you can kind of think about that and see what you experience on May 9th, which is a very powerful eclipse energy. Slow down, says Taurus. You know, slow down, take stock of things, where you at. Things can be better than this. We know it. And how do we get there? You know, that's one of the questions this eclipse asks. So that's one of the really big deals this month. And, you know, just to give another, you know, kind of mythic image to carry with you for this eclipse, you know, Taurus is really the Earth Mother. You know, she is all the, you know, surrounded by the gardens and the produce and the flowers and the herbs and, again, all of the good things in life. And what are they? They're very simple. Food, shelter, you know, some clothing. You know, just our basic needs. Taurus kind of gets us back to that. Then we can take it from there. You know, that's really setting our priorities. So there's another eclipse on May 24th, 25th, depending on where in the world you are. That's going to be close to midnight Central Time. I guess that's going to be almost the next day on the East Coast. Now, this is a full moon, and it's not, however, a total eclipse. It's very subtle. It's called a penumbral eclipse. We're only going to be in kind of like the periphery of the shadow. On a full moon, the sun throws the shadow of the earth onto the moon. But it's just catching like the outside part of the shadow, so we'll hardly even see it, which is actually appropriate for the energy of this moon. But I want to mention one thing that precedes this moon. Right in between the eclipses, we're having a exact alignment, an exact square. I'm not sure of the astrology literacy of this listening audience. I want to say hello to Linda Coffey, and I want to say hello to Teresa, if you've been emailing me, and just a couple of people that I know, and I'm not sure who else is on the call. And I'm asking that because a square is two planets facing off at a 90-degree angle, which is a square. It's squaring it. It's an active dynamic relationship between the two planets, like striking stones together and sparks happen kind of thing. They're in signs that work very differently, but they're both, kind of contending and are really opening things up because we face challenge and conflict because it's time for a change. We got to put effort in there and do it. The planets involved with this square are Pluto, the god of death and rebirth, and Uranus, the revolutionary. Now, these two planets got together in 1965-66 to start a new 125-year cycle, and now we're a quarter of the way through that, kind of like a half moon. And this is a shift point in the cycle that brings it up. It brings the 60s to the next level, and we are having a series of exact squares within a larger time frame of this planetary dynamic. But these exact squares go from 2012 all the way into 2015, and we're about to have the third one on May 20th. Now, this really moves things along because these two planets have to do with the collective consciousness and the collective agenda of what is going on. Pluto went into Capricorn in 2008. We weren't using the words green and sustainable very much before that. Pluto went into an earth sign, Capricorn. And what happened that year? The bank bailouts, we started to kind of really get an idea of the power of business and the underlying motivation of business as it is these days, which is greed. And realizing that this is not sustainable, all of the structures and systems that we live on Earth under, government, corporations, the economic system, political systems, this is not viable. So Pluto's going to be stripping these systems down, and we're getting back to basics and redesigning, restructuring. And this phase lasts all the way to 2024. But we sure got a fast start. And Uranus kicked it into a higher gear. Uranus went into the sign of Aries, which is about taking initiative, standing forward, not counting on the government to do it for us. Aries is like, I have to have my say. When Uranus went into Aries, we called it Arab Spring. We called it the Occupy movement. It created a new revolution, largely fed by the media, social media. Uranus is all about technology, all about the social, kind of revolution and a change of consciousness that is the higher mind awakens things. So this is, we are putting, stepping forward putting footprints in the fresh snow. No one's ever been here before. We're, you know, we're kind of having to step forward in our Aries integrity. Integrity, important word for Aries. You know, I got to do what I got to do. And this is not coming from a selfish place. It's, you know, ideally coming from a perspective of higher mind, higher change, higher consciousness. So that's what we want here, to kind of change the systems. What do we need to initiate? What do we need to invent, you know, to kind of change the way we work? What do we need to free up in terms of the old systems that are holding things back? So this exact square on May 20th is another one of those, like, the wheel is moving on, we aren't going back, there's no such thing as going back to normal. There's no normal. We're inventing the new normal, but we won't have a normal for quite a number of years yet. Uranus is in Aries, you know, kind of wagon trains heading west, jumping on to the Enterprise that, you know, the motto of the Starship Enterprise was to explore, to go where no one has gone before, to explore new civilizations and new worlds. That's what we're doing. So that's a seven-year phase that started in 2011. So that goes on for a few more years as well. And we're at one of the striking points, the one, you know, with the eclipse and then this, and then another eclipse on May 24th, 25th. So interesting. So this eclipse is a full moon. It's the sun is in Gemini. Variety is the spice of life. And the full moon is in Sagittarius. It's an interesting combination of signs. Gemini is interested, curious about all sorts of things, you know, willing to entertain all kinds of ideas, very open-minded, very changeable, like a patchwork quilt, putting all the pieces, you know, gathering all the pieces, like a busy bee gathering all the pollen. And then Sagittarius puts all the pieces together to make a puzzle fit together. It gives us a sense of direction. It's our intuitive sense of how to synthesize, how to bring all those pieces together. It's like what the bees do with all the pollen. They make honey. So that's kind of the combination of Gemini and Sagittarius, both signs that are really about our knowledge and wisdom, about using our minds, but also using our intuition and imagination. Now, this full moon is in a challenging relationship to the planet Neptune. Neptune, the god of the sea, has just entered the sign of Pisces after about 160 years. Neptune stays in a sign for 14 years, like Uranus and Pluto. Neptune is one of the outer planets that has a lot to do with the trends of the time, the a level of the change in the collective consciousness going on. So Neptune just changed sign last year in 2012. The god of the sea goes into the sign of the sea. You know, kind of the god of the sea is like swimming there with all the fish. And so this full moon is squared, challenged, activated, and is activating Neptune. And Neptune is the dream time planet. And so the shamans say the world is as we dream it. So what is our dream? What is our vision? Are we getting distracted by all the information coming from all over the place? You get on the internet and you read all of this stuff. It's like, whose version of reality are you listening to? There are all kinds of spins on it. So Neptune is, there's a meltdown in reality going on, and the veil is getting very thin, and it's very confusing, and it's like, go with the flow, because there's no other way to go, but it can be very distracting. And this full moon in Sagittarius wants to aim that arrow It wants a direction. It wants to head somewhere. So part of this is, what is our vision? Let's talk about it. Let's, like, what is this vision? You know, are we, like, heading toward a nightmare, disaster, chaos? Or are we going to keep clear on our vision about what it is that we really want? Peace and love in the world. You know, sharing goodwill with others. Neptune is a very compassionate place. It is a very spiritually oriented, mystical experience. But the downside is it can be crazy-making. It can be anxiety-producing. It's like worry, worry. Oh, I'm just, you know, and it's extra sensitive. So it's very absorbent. It's so easy to kind of go out there in the marketplace, so to speak, and pick up all these vibes and just get out of whack. So this is important to keep an awareness that we're all more sensitive. This is a state of being. We're tuned in to more subtle energies. So we might need more time alone, or, you know, in meditation or in whatever, you know, kind of quiet space we claim to just, you know, let all the impressions wash away and come back to our own kind of clarity and keep in tune with our highest vision, with our true vision. So that's part of what this full moon eclipse is saying. There's a ripple through the system, and this might be, you know, kind of a literal ripple, as we are in the peak of the solar flare peak, where solar flares come in with a heightened energy and charge up our atmospheres with a lot of electricity, you know, that brings in the aurora borealis in such a glorious way. But we feel it. It's like, what radio station are we tuned to? And if we're getting static, we need to keep fine-tuning so we get a station. And if we don't like the station, let's change the station so we don't have to put up with the static. But this is like, we are the radio. We are each an electromagnetic being that is tuning in to these frequencies coming in, whether it's coming in from the galactic center, whether it's coming in from these solar flares. There's a lot of cosmic activity. The astrophysicists have also identified that we are in this, people are calling it various things. The scientists started by calling it local flux. I like that. That's a scientific term. Local flux or photon belt. Photons are the smallest light energy that is like vibrating, little like sparkles vibrating in and out of our field. So we're just thinking of shimmering, sparkling energy, and we're starting to shimmer with this. You know, it's very subtle frequencies coming in that are opening something up, and we need time to kind of download it. It's like we're getting a new program from the center of the galaxy through the sun, and we need to kind of like download it. So we need downtime a bit. You know, you can't run your computer when it's downloading a new system, and it's kind of like that. So that's one aspect of this full moon eclipse on the 24th, 25th of May. Then we've got a whole interesting alignment of planets in Gemini. Not just the sun, there's a whole party of planets that's been hanging out together. Started in Pisces in like February, went into Aries in March into April, then it went into Taurus, and we still got that Taurus energy for the beginning of May and that solar eclipse, that new moon eclipse. Then the energy starts shifting into Gemini. Variety is the spice of life. Gemini is like spinning a lot of plates. It's like a juggler. And it's like, whoa, how many balls can we juggle? So And how many points of view can we entertain? How many possibilities can you imagine, can you put out there? You know, Jupiter has been in Gemini since last summer. And Jupiter expands, it brings out all kinds of options, possibilities, opportunities. If things are changing around so much, aren't you having trouble kind of keeping up with yourself? I certainly am. And there's so many things I don't know what to do first sometimes. Even my lists aren't helping me very much. So, you know, this is kind of Jupiter. Sometimes it's just like too much. But it's also the wisdom planet. So it's saying entertain different points of view and look where your mind is going. Gemini has a lot to do with the way we think about things. And one of the planets in Gemini the second half of May, almost all of May actually, is Mercury. Mercury goes into Gemini, on the 15th, yes, halfway through. Now, Mercury rules Gemini. And this is kind of like the words we use to think, how we perceive. So this is, there are many ways to think about anything. You know, there are many facets to the crystal. And this is important in Gemini to kind of move around and see any situation from a different point of view, because this gives us different options, different response possibilities. And Jupiter's saying, you know, like, just put them all out there. Don't edit yet. So Mercury does this also. It's like a lot of conversations. It's all the voices in our heads. We can start to choose which voices we really want to listen to. Do we want to listen to the anxiety-ridden, worry-wart person in us? Or do we want to listen to the, this is a really interesting time to be alive kind of voice? Now, Mercury is at 19 degrees of Gemini, and so is Venus. Now, Venus is said to be the higher ruler of Gemini. Because there's Mercury can bring forth all the possibilities. And then we've got them all sitting around. Well, they don't sit, they more or less jump around in Gemini. And it's like a Gemini is the tennis player sign. Venus synthesizes them all. Venus harmonizes them all. So it all makes sense at another level. This is the bees making honey again. This is also, it starts resonating with the heart. It brings the higher mind and the lower mind into resonance. Mercury is like spread your arms out on either side of you, and Mercury can go to the right or it can go to the left or both. You know, it's like you have two hands. Venus is where you look over your head and under your feet. You're aligning the higher and the lower. To resolve and synthesize the duality of Gemini. So this is like a coming from the heart. Now there's another factor at 19 degrees of Gemini, the black moon Lilith. Yes, the black moon Lilith, which is not a body. Here's a beautiful quote by Peter Redgrove, a very interesting Jungian psychology man from England who's written some interesting books. This quote really, to me, epitomizes something about the black moon. It is as though the moon threw down a black body upon Earth, visible only to the subliminal senses, which thereby became illuminated. It is as though the moon threw down a black body. That sounds really a lot like an eclipse. Threw down a black body upon Earth, visible only to the subliminal senses. Not our five, you know, basic senses, but our subliminal senses. You know, we have many of those. Intuition is one of them. That sixth sense, you know, we often talk about, they're probably way more than that. And they're lighting up because of this new energy coming into our system is really heightening the subliminal senses. which can also include, we could say, a kind of organic wisdom of the body, now that we know that the mind is not only in the brain. The mind is all throughout the body, and the heart is a, more of a intelligence organ than the brain. Let's not put down the brain. You know, with Uranus in Aries now, the sign of the head of the brain, we're certainly, you know, turning on new neural pathways. You know, we are really opening some new, you know, brain waves. But this is more the, you know, we need to be tuning into kind of organic surrounding, you know, which is nature, but also, you know, our, the larger cosmos, the larger solar system that we're in. But we're getting to be galactic. So that's even a really broad base. Visible only to the subliminal senses, which thereby became illuminated. So this is like our invisible body of light, we could say. Here's China Galland, who's a wonderful writer, and she wrote a book called Longing for Darkness, and where she talks about the Black Madonna and the Black Tara, which is a kind of Eastern version of the Black Madonna. And here's a quote that I love from her that also, I think, tells a lot about the Black Moon. This is the black of starless night, of starless midnight, a state of translucence or transparency that is beyond dark and light. This is a radiant black. It's kind of like a space, you know, a kind of a space of energy and potential. And one could say there's nothing there, and there's nothing there physical, you know, but there's energy there. You know, it's, and this is where we open those subliminal senses, where we open to this spaciousness. Now, in order to do that, we can't bring our ego in there. The ego would shut that down, you know, because the ego likes to control it, likes to know what it's dealing with, it likes to know where it's at. And we can't bring ego in there because the ego makes judgment. You know, ego has to have an idea about it. So this is definitely an opening of the soul. And I think the Black Moon is the deep desire that brings the soul into incarnation so that it can be freed to return to spirit. We have to go through certain things, you know, we have to have our experiences. And they say that the earth, you know, being in a physical body on the earth is you know, can be fast track if we take advantage of it, you know, to work through a lot of our spiritual darkness and to come into the light. So here's the Black Moon is one of those points where we can tap into that. So here we have an exact alignment at 19 degrees Gemini of Mercury, which rules Gemini, Venus, which is the higher ruler of Gemini, and the Black Moon. So this is a very extraordinary kind of wisdom. This is a kind of crazy wisdom, actually. And if we add the fact that Jupiter is right close by, too, you know, Jupiter is the planet of wisdom. So we're, you know, the crazy wisdom part comes in from the Black Moon that is non-logical. You know, it's beyond logic. It's illogical. You know, whenever we get into, you know, judgment or trying to make sense of it, we aren't there. So this really takes a great deal of openness. I did a lot of research on Lilith because, you know, she called me. She's an ancient female energy from way back prehistory. The first writings we have are on clay tablets from the Middle East. And they tell of Lilith as being the dark maid in the tree. This is like the original tree in Eden, but it was before that story. So this is the tree that Inanna, who's the planet Venus, planted in her garden. And Lilith appeared in the tree with a snake in the roots and a wild winged bird in the branches, really connecting heaven and earth. And she's dark, and she is of mysteries. And we don't use the black moon in the U.S. a lot. More and more people are becoming interested because there's a fascination about Lilith. But they've been using it for quite a while now, like, you know, a good century in Europe. There's a lot of writings in French. I think the countries that have the black Madonnas use the black moon more. But anyway, it's a level of consciousness that we're starting to tune into more and more. So Lilith wanted to share with Inanna something about the deep mysteries. But Inanna wasn't ready. And plus these were maybe kind of too raw. Lilith can be pretty raw. Then she came back as the serpent in the tree, who gave Eve the apple. Hey, honey, there's some things you need to know. And she was called the first wife of Adam, who left because he wanted to be on top all the time. You know, top dog. She's like, hey, we're created equal. He goes, no, you're made of dirty dust and I'm made of clean dust. And she goes, no way, Jose, I'm out of here. And she uttered the ineffable name of God, which only she knew, and she flew off. She returned as that wisdom snake. We are in the year of the snake, so let her come. Then she got very popular over the centuries with, in the 1800s, there was a lot of art. You Google Lilith and you will just get so many different sites and a lot of pictures. There's a famous one by John Collier from 1892 where she's this naked woman with long blonde hair, and there's this like big fat, you know, kind of serpent like wrapped around her. Interestingly, there is a constellation in the sky of a man with a naked man with a serpent wrapped around his body. He's called Ophiuchus, the serpent charmer. So I think Lilith is the female version of Ophiuchus, who is known as a healer. So there she is, and he's got one foot on the red star that marks the heart of the scorpion, and the other foot is right on the Milky Way. So he is riding some pretty powerful energy. And we could say, you know, Lilith kind of reverberates with that. So she's certainly become quite iconic in our collective consciousness. There is, you know, this fascination. Now, I don't know who might know the poet Rilke here. He's a black moon poet for sure. He had a very strong black moon. His poetry is so deep. Here's one of my favorites of his that I think also really conveys some of the essence of Lilith. Silent friend of many distances, feel how your breath enlarges all of space. In this immeasurable darkness, be the power that rounds your senses in their magic ring, the sense of their mysterious encounter. To me, that says it all about what these eclipses are offering, about our capacity to open our consciousness, dream a new dream together, envision a future that we will move into with as we can really feel our way from the heart into it. Silent friend of many distances, feel how your breath enlarges all of space. In this immeasurable darkness, be the power that rounds your senses in their magic ring, the sense of their mysterious encounter. Oh, well, there's so much more to say, but I wanted to leave time for comments, questions, and Denise, if there, you know, you want to kind of lead the way with that, or let me know.
Okay, sure. Well, that's some great information. I just had one question with the with that alignment, that exact alignment with Mercury, Venus, and Black Moon Lilith. Is that on a specific day, or how long is that alignment with us?
That's a good question. Well, Mercury moves basically 1 degree a day, so it's really a one-day exact phenomenon, and that's why it's so cool that it's on the eclipse.
Oh, wow.
You know, they're all at 19, 19, 19. And if we look back to the new moon eclipse on May 9th, the new moon is at 19. The moon and the sun are at 19, 19. And just to add another little quirk in there, Pallas, the asteroid Pallas Athena, the goddess of wisdom, is at 19 Taurus, and the asteroid Lilith is also at 19 Taurus. So we've got 19, 19, 19, 19 Taurus, and then we've got 19, 19, 19 Gemini. Isn't that just awesome?
Yeah, that's got to mean something extremely rare and powerful.
Yes. Yes. I know that. And 19, you know, is a number of new beginnings.
Okay.
Because it boils down to the number one. So it's really quite amazing. So what we need to do is ground ourselves, you know, really, really get our feet on the ground and really get grounded, be in our bodies for that Taurus eclipse, reground ourselves, get our roots down, down, down to the center of the earth if we can. That's where we can tap into the life-giving waters. And then on the full moon eclipse, we're like magicians. We're like, you know, with all of these possibilities, you know, that are circling in the air and bouncing around like balls, we grab the brightest balls. We, you know, it's like there's so many distractions. You know, it's like keep your eye on the ball kind of thing. You know, what is, you know, the vision, the version of reality that you really want to, like, fly on, you know?
Wow. Crazy.
And it's the soul decides. It's the soul. It doesn't necessarily make rational sense. And we might think, oh, that could never happen, but that is limited thinking.
Okay. I'm going to open it up. If anybody out there has a question that they would like, just press *6. That'll unmute you, and then you can ask Kelly a question. We'll give it a minute, Kelly, to see if anybody unmutes themselves. You never know. Sometimes people are so overwhelmed with information. I know there's times with me it's like get your head on straight to be able to ask a question.
I know, especially for people who don't know much astrology, which is why I try to use images, you know, to kind of help short-circuit the language problem.
Hello, is there someone there that would like to ask a question?
Yes, this is Lisa in San Francisco.
Sure, go ahead.
And my question is this. I'm looking at the full moon, the planets on that day, and I see where Venus and Mercury are conjunct at 19 in Gemini, but I'm showing Black Moon at 28 Gemini. So,
well, yes. Now, that brings us into a whole other aspect of Lilith, which is... it's the invisible mathematical point that's the second focus of the moon's orbit around the Earth, which varies constantly because of the changing gravitational effect between the Earth, moon, sun, and anything else around. So there are different ways of measuring the black moon. And the one most usually used is the mean black moon. You know, if you know astrology, it's a similar thing with the nodes of the moon. There's a true position and a mean position. So the mean position is like the mean average motion, you know, because that's just one way of looking at it. It keeps the node going in one direction. It keeps the black moon moving forward through the zodiac. But the true position wiggles a lot like a belly dancer. And the true is much harder to calculate. And it goes back and forth constantly, really fast and really far. So there are actually two positions of the black moon. And I have, since I saw the true black moon at 19, I decided to use that one. I have that option, you know, that's the option. But I have become more interested in the true black moon lately. I read some article by a Russian astrologer who said that the mean black moon is what we imagine reality to be, or where what we think is reality, but it's not the true reality. If there's something a little off about it because of our take. Well, I'm not sure I'm just really articulating quite well what he said, but it's something like that. But in any case, they're both valid, and I used the true because it was at 19.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. And I know Astrodean allows us to pull out both of them, and I found it now at 19.
Yeah. Oh, good.
So thank you.
Good.
Sure. Is anyone else who would like to ask a question? We still got some time.
Well, I do invite people to visit my website for sure. You mentioned it early on.
Right. I think, let's see, I'll go ahead and tell everybody what the website is. Did you also say that you had a special for everyone?
Yes, anyone who's listening tonight, I'd like to offer an Astro special. And my usual fee is $150 per hour, but I'm going to bring it down for this select audience to $95 for an hour. Especially if you'd like to investigate the black moon in your chart, this could be, you know, a good opportunity with the eclipse coming up that's kind of evoking this energy. So just let me know you're a Wisdom Calls One person and that you...
Perfect.
My email is Kel, K-E-L-L, Hunter, at earthlink.net. And probably there's a link on the website to that.
Right.
I recently have the website, and I want to be putting more stuff up on it, you know, kind of when I get around to it. You know, it's like all of these different things to be doing, and sometimes I just want to go swimming.
Exactly, especially where you're at. It would be nice to go swimming. When you're in the Virgin Islands, you should be go swimming.
Uh-huh, I know.
Yeah,
we're
really close to the top of the hour. So I want to thank Kelly for a truly, truly magical, mythical hour. Sometimes all I can say with this is just wow. So there is fabulous information here, ladies. And again, how to connect with Kelly for reading or some of the other fun stuff that she's offering. Her website, again, is www.heliastar.com. That's HELIASTAR.com. And it is. It's full of astro-mythology, info on the goddesses. There's books. There's DVDs. There's MP3s. There is so much more on her website. And as Kelly mentioned, to email her, you go to Kel Hunter, K-E-L-L-H-U-N-T-E-R, at earthlink.net. or go to her webpage, click on the contact link, leave her message there. And also remember, Kelly's available for like mentoring and workshops, presentations, other fun creative endeavors. And definitely after today's discussion, grab a copy of her book about the Black Moon Lilith. And as she said, for all Wisdom Calls One ladies, there's a special $95 to talk with Kelly Hunter, and that is an amazing prize.
That will go all through May. And also to let you know, I'm going to Chicago in May 11th. There is a Conscious Connections conference in Oak Brook. And then I'll be going up to the Heaven Meets Earth Yoga Studio in Evanston for a few days of work and workshops. So if anyone's around there or wants to alert any of your goddess-oriented friends, astrology-oriented friends, that's where I'll be May 11th through 14th.
Great. Yeah, I'm glad you let everybody know that. So, okay, and for all the new women that happen to be on the call today, please visit our website, which is www.wisdomcallsone.com. There's speakers there to download. Also, sign up on the email list so you get notified of all upcoming speakers and also upcoming classes and programs. Speaking of which, I am putting together a business mentoring group that I'm excited about. So if you're interested in learning more about becoming a successful entrepreneur, how to use social media, how to market your web presence, business plans, and also finding out what belief patterns that are holding you back from moving forward with the small business that you so dearly love, contact me. The group is going to be small. We're going to learn from experts as well as each other. So just send me an email. Tell me you're interested, and I'll be letting everyone know about the details of that program, which I'm hoping will begin in June. So, and once again, I want to thank Kelly Hunter for one fabulous hour. I love Black Moon Lilith. And tonight I will leave everybody with a quote from Linda Goodman, also about Lilith. And she says, "The Black Moon point is where we are lured into the mystery. She insists that we feel through, let go, surrender to something essential and transparent in us that is primary. The bedrock beneath the shifting sands, the passion of the soul. It is a corridor into the heart through which we are lured to discover our deepest truths, the longings and yearnings of our souls, and thereby leading us to the deeper truth within our hearts, the longings and yearnings of our souls." So, Kelly, once again, thank you. And everyone, thanks for joining us. And have a fabulous month of May, this great eclipse season that we're in the middle of. Okay, thanks again, everybody. Bye-bye.
Delighted. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.